The next thing that I wanted to talk about when I consider the evolution of your business case white paper, Colin, is in particular the model for wellness, the framework for wellness. When you get into your purpose guide, dealing with the return on investment for wellness programs, you take a little bit of time and you kind of define for people what is the framework of a purposeful, comprehensive wellness program. And it's been a while now, that this again, holistic, multidimensional approach, and I'm sure you see a spectrum anywhere from probably 6 to 10 dimensions of wellness that get highlighted and spotlighted as that framework through which communities, again, position their specific wellness program. And so can you talk a little bit about that, as far as, is that still, in your opinion, and based on what you found, again, validating the business case for wellness, is that still the model that organizations and that community should follow? It's this dimensions of wellness approach that, again, deals with, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 of these areas. I think we all know what the general areas are and what they tend to impact. Did you find that framework is a big part of what makes these wellness programs effective?
Well, I think what it does is it gives you some structure to build your programs, your culture, your environments around. The YMCA, as an example, is body, mind, and spirit. Three, pretty straightforward. But if you look at it, it's what they do around it. If you have 10 dimensions of wellness, 12 dimensions of wellness, it's what you do around it that matters. When it comes to the now, I think that there are two things to look at when you're looking at your wellness programs. One is consumer facing. What does the consumer see? And the other is the structure behind the scenes within your community. And I think that the wellness structure around, purposeful programming really benefits from the various dimensions of wellness. I think sometimes we can confuse the consumer, by getting too carried away on the consumer level. So I think the more simple we make it for people to understand, the better. But on the programmatic side, I think it's really important to, create the framework for what you're doing and what you're delivering around various dimensions. On the consumer side, they don't know, a lot of times they don't need to know that because they exercise, it's going to be, good for their emotional health. They'll figure that out, unless you are targeting people who have emotional health issues such as depression. But generally speaking, let's use as an example, if I'm out for a walk, and I'm out with someone, okay, so walking is the physical, someone is the social, maybe I'm actually having an intellectual conversation, and they're challenging me cognitively, and it's in an incredible environment that is now environmental. I mean, you can make the case for multiple dimensions just with that one thing. But at the end of the day, the consumer just simply goes, I'm out for a walk with a person, and I'm actually getting and feeling much better. So I think sometimes we don't want to complicate things on the consumer end, but on the professional end, we absolutely want to have a framework to work from. Now, 6 dimensions, 7 dimensions, 12 dimensions, everybody's always going to try and customize things to be the best for their organization. At the end of the day, it's really, are you following it and is it making a difference?
I think that's incredibly interesting because of how young wellness still is, again, within senior living, relatively speaking. I think whatever sort of framework and model comes out, and especially if it's through an organization like yours, that's just so credible and respected, I think we follow suit because of that. And so I think however you decide to either distinguish, and I think you're right about consumer facing and the value proposition there versus inwardly facing, organizationally facing for the sake of organizing and having some structure behind it. I think that's going to become increasingly more and more relevant is that framework of wellness and how we end up advancing that moving forward. So I think that'll be a conversation that'll remain interesting to have. So having set up the framework for how you're defining wellness, understanding where some of the background methodology and some of the numbers and the research all stem from, I want to get into some of the different sections of the white paper itself. I want to begin with your first part, which is how wellness fulfills the organization's mission. And you talked a little bit about this earlier in one of your points, and how that's something that undoubtedly communities are mentioning, whether it's on their website, on collateral pieces, as part of their tagline. There's some component of, you know, your health and wellness will get better. It will improve. You're better off here than if you either stay at home or if you go to one of our competitors. Those are arguably some of the statements that our communities are making. What evolution did you find, again, in the last handful of years since your last white paper on this came out? You know, obviously, communities are still going to feel like it helps them make good on their mission. Was there any progress, Colin, as far as any sort of more objective validation of that? How did communities, if at all, come to any sort of conclusion that, yes, this did make me, you know, make good on my mission, or through surveys or other mechanisms, they were able to really validate how having that wellness program in place and well branded and well executed was actually able to help them make good on that mission?
Well, I think there are two answers to that to jump right out at me, and that is, you know, number one is ICAA did a survey of about 472 senior living communities, and we found that the terminology now included things like wellness, quality of life, lifestyle, that many years ago it didn't, or it was much, much less, because wellness was much, much less. And what that says to me is that, you know, organizations are recognizing the benefit of it, and we have seen a massive rebranding going on across the industry, where everything from the renaming of communities to the renaming of programs to the refocusing of purpose. You know, the one thing that we have not seen a lot of, interestingly enough, is the commitment to staffing. You know, and in my mind, if you're really going to get into wellness and you are going to be delivering all of these services, and over the last 8 years, 10 years, ICAA does a trends report every couple of years, and it has always shown that there are more programs being created, more facilities in communities being built. But what it hasn't shown is a massive increase in the dollars or staffing levels. So I think that moving forward, as we move into wellness, and if we're really going to fulfill our mission, we're actually also going to need to step up and hire more people to fulfill that. But I think that will come where we will be able to afford that, because we'll be spending less on people in the care area, because we will be seeing people remaining well for a longer period of time, if that is our culture. So it's not so much adding more people, it's as the culture changes, so will the focus, and so will the staffing needs, and so will the needs of the customer. So we will see less of a need on care and more of a need on wellness, and less expense in care and more expense or investment in wellness. At least that's the way I visualize that the future will go. The challenge is getting the operators of the communities to see that as well.
Yeah, and I can actually understand and appreciate why that struggle is there. I think we talk a lot about just sort of in the last decade plus the vagueness and maybe not full comprehension of what wellness means. And I think we're coming around to better understanding what that is. I'm not too surprised that how wellness is staffed, it's almost where wellness was again a decade plus ago. And you think about communities getting a little bit more on board with the brand of wellness, I think upon identifying better who needs to lead and champion wellness, I think that then allows for that staffing component to better follow. I know organizationally, even for Life Care Services, within our dozens of communities, there's probably dozens of positions that are out there, from life enrichment director to community life services director to wellness manager to again, it could sort of be dozens, and I think not having sort of a unifying position or title, and whether that's practical or not, I don't know. But you think of other operational departments or other positions, it just lends itself to knowing you're going to need one of those individuals or two or three or four of those that make up that specific department. I think with the vagueness that we still have with wellness to a degree, it just unfortunately lends itself to not have clarity. I know that I want to talk about this a little bit further, but since we brought it up, I know that you all are, with some of the strides that your organization is making from a leadership and wellness management certificate, I think those are the types of things that can provide that staffing unification, to have people understand, hey, look, by having a wellness department or a wellness program within our community, it means that somebody should have these types of credentials behind them, and therefore let's staff accordingly, let's certify accordingly. So it's probably multifaceted, but I think the evolution of educational courses and certificate courses such as yours can really help get us in that direction.
Well, I think that what is happening, and you just said the magic word, and that is it's an evolution. It's an evolutionary process, and we are in the process probably midstream right now in my mind. We certainly haven't gone to the maturity level that we need to yet. But I think about it, and that is the new certificate program that we have, Leadership and Wellness Management. It is not a wellness manager certificate. It is a person who is leading wellness within an organization. So let's use as an example, we talk about staffing. If the culture of an organization is highly focused on wellness, and you have someone that is your leader in wellness management, actually you should have multiple people, but if you have someone that is your leader in wellness management, they are working with all of your other departments as part of that wellness culture. So what ends up shifting is the mindset that you just have one person in your wellness department to where now everybody's part of the wellness culture, which completely changes your staff dynamic and also your staffing level committed to wellness. So now your dining is focused on wellness. Your housekeeping is focused on wellness. Your landscaping is focused on wellness. Your, all of the different areas, your resident services are more focused on wellness. All of these different areas now become part of the wellness culture, and underneath that program, this person works with each of the departments to keep them in the game, should we say, so that everybody is on the board playing the game as opposed to just one department.
Yeah, I think that's pretty pivotal. And one of the things organizationally that we've been doing is better branding what we call health and wellness navigation, which is in essence how residents are connected to all things health and wellness, whether they're preventative or reactive, and across all levels of care, and really leveraging both internal and external resources. And when I think about what we've seen over the last year plus that we've gotten communities going with this initiative has really been what a lot of what you're saying, which is identifying that wellness champion. And again, whether it's one or several individuals, and aside from reporting relationships or who actually makes up that department or who may or may not, even just having that small degree of universalness, I think really lends itself to allowing for that culture of wellness to really permeate and resonate throughout the community. So I think that's helpful. And I can envision, again, whether it's somebody specifically in a wellness lifestyle community life department, or some of these health and wellness navigators or navigation team leaders, as we call them sometimes, really benefiting from, again, being poised in wellness management, as you mentioned. So I think that could certainly be helpful.
That's why we created the course, Tony, and that is, you know, we didn't want to come out with a course that everybody and their mother already has, because, you know, we're just being redundant then. What we did was we looked at what's the gap. And to me, where the gap was, you know, breaking down the silos and creating the culture of wellness, and who is actually going to be helping to do that. You know, conversation after conversation, survey after survey showed us that that was what was missing. And that's what this course fills, is the knowledge and education to be able to, and the skill level to be able to do that, as opposed to just, not just, but, you know, as opposed to becoming a fitness instructor or a wellness coach. Each of those positions are very valuable, but that's not what's missing. There are lots of wellness coaches, lots of fitness instructors out there who are doing a fantastic job. What's missing is somebody who is actually able to get the whole community behind it and actually knows how to manage change, communication, and the business aspect of wellness.
That makes total sense. So Colin, jumping in a little bit further into some of the bottom line findings that your white paper had, I think one of the when people think about at the community level why they institute what wellness programs and what it means for them and what they're trying to get out of it, I think being able to validate that those residents that engage in their wellness program as we're defining it are happier. They're more engaged and they're happier than those that don't. And so your white paper certainly validates that. So talk about that a little bit. And did you find a whole lot of difference from 5 years ago to now?
Well, I think that what we have seen is that 5 years ago, the kinds of programs and, you know, the level of programs were much different. So I think that, you know, that in itself has actually made a big difference in regards to people's quality of life, and you know that people are actually happier by participating. You know, what we have found is that people in a life plan or CCRCs who participate in you know, wellness programs, you know, 87% of them are very satisfied or satisfied with their overall quality of life. You know, that's not 100%. We still have room for growth. But that's not bad, you know, given the fact that, you know, a lot of people sometimes complain about their, you know, their quality of life, you know, that wellness really has an impact on that. And what was really interesting to me, if I look at all of that, is that the quality of life of an individual within a community versus within a the general population as a whole is actually higher. Now, yes, these are self-reported individuals, as they are in the CDC information, by the way. So, you know, both surveys are self-reported. So they certainly leave room for minor error, but at the end of the day, individuals who reside in your communities that are participating in wellness are much more happy with their quality of life than individuals that are in the general community. Now, not only is that a major opportunity from a marketing standpoint, but also from an engagement standpoint, when people are saying, "I don't know what the value is of all of this," when you can turn to the ProMature benchmarks and say, out of 4,000 plus residents that were surveyed, we know that their quality of life has gone up, and you highlight that as something that you want to work on. Here's how we can help you do that.
Yeah, and what I think, Colin, is of pretty crucial relevance with what you're with how you measured that part is that it's a product of their participation in the wellness program. I think too often, people want to connect those dots, and they want to say, again, in theory, this, a wellness program, a given wellness program, in theory, could make you happier, could make you more engaged, could make you more satisfied with living here. I think of what just really needs to be emphasized with your research is that it's correlated, it's a causal correlation, and it's a product of people participating. So communities can feel really confident about, it's because of what we did that they were, that they remained engaged and satisfied. Would you agree with that?
It's all about quantifiable, being able to quantify it. We did not look at anything that was, okay, I'm going for a walk, unless it was a program that somebody would log in and say, these 20 people went for a walk for X. All of it was that the people actually did what they said that they were doing. A lot of times, I'll give you an example. A lot of times you'll get data where somebody will come in, they'll swipe a card saying that they've been into a fitness or a wellness center. They could be sitting on the couch, as far as you know, and you don't have any further data. This was inputted by staff in the field, and our goal was for something that was staff-led, that you could actually quantify the participation, and that they were the ones that were filling it out to say, yes, so and so participated in this class. So you are correct. It is absolutely someone sitting there, or the data is sitting there based on people actually doing it, as opposed to something that we think they may have or may not have done. And then the result from that, and the result is, because I've done this, I feel like I have a better quality of life.
Legal disclaimer: LifeCare Services LLC is not engaged in rendering legal advice. Therefore, any information provided in this podcast, although intended to be correct, is also not intended to replace or supersede the advice of your legal counsel. Also, thank you to Ben Sounds for the music provided in this podcast.